Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
Thank you.
Yes, we are at it again, y'all. I believe this is show number 1,551. Welcome. As we get ready to lay out the Hump Day Buffet, courtesy of your loving mad scientist, Mike Lewis Ingram. So, can't get that soul. Tree Radio in the Raw. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. Proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and The Assassin. Other Black Athletes Sports Network. All the good shit. The who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now, at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, wherever they may be. Radio Reggie in Richmond, Virginia. My brother D'Orlando Ledbetter in Philly. Fascinating the mighty Oba, doing Oba things only as Oba can do. Much love to Oba and Stephanie. My man, Professor Fred Riddick at North Carolina, the old Phil Jill, and the rest of the gang when they show up. And, of course, rattling them pots and pans. My main man, the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Greg. What up, G?
Fear the deer.
Fearing the deer, huh? Well, you know, Milwaukee has done what it's done. And in this playoff time, the deer will come back and do damage. But before we get into the deer, earlier last year, we told the tale of Calvin Ridley, that dumb fuck. He's a wide receiver for the Atlanta Falcons. He had worked out all phases of his rookie contract, and it looked as if a nice fat payday was coming into view. And he probably would have been making somewhere between 10 and 15 million guaranteed as a free agent if that dumbass hadn't been on football. He spent $1,500 that he didn't have to gamble. And he fucked up. He lost his opportunity to get paid. And even in spite of the fact he sits the 2022 season, someone may take a shot at him. But if I read the contracts right, and I'm sure someone will tell me if I did not, he will only be eligible for the veteran minimum since he's missed the whole season. So he went from making a possible cha-ching $15 million to $1.5 million a season, which is the veteran minimum. Now, like I said, this is a dumb fuck. Who's at the other spectrum of dumb fuckery? One Debo Samuel. Yes.
Oh, boy.
This young man did right by himself. Debo was taken in the second round of the 2019 NFL draft. Now, a lot of people really weren't sure about him at first. He went to South Kakalaki. South Kakalaki has some great receivers like Sterling Sharp and his brother who went to a South Carolina school where he did not go to South Carolina. But he got some strong, country strong brothers down there. And Debo started out catching passes. And he was catching passes quite well. Eventually, his role expanded to running as well as catching the ball. Now, don't get me wrong. A wide receiver is supposed to run when they catch the ball. But the 49ers were specific in using Debo as a running back as well as a wide receiver. So he had a dual role and excelled in it. So now we are at the point with the Liars Club convened tomorrow evening that Debo has a shot to get paid. And all for it. You know, we want the brothers to get as much as they can because life is too short, y'all. However, and there's always a however because we say however when we get tired of saying but San Francisco 49ers are playing hardball with him. What say you, G? And our third member of the line, Tony McClain, is in the mix.
Okay. Let's make this perfectly clear here. When Debo Samuel became a wide receiver, the Niners tried to devalue his worth as the game they're
right.
playing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, you have the religious aspect of this. Debo is, a very religious man.
Really? Okay.
You have some people in the Niner organization
mm-hmm.
with, with the gay crowd.
Hmm.
So, once again, we're dealing with the sexuality of teams. I remember a couple of years ago with Mark Jackson.
Yeah.
And the Golden State Warriors.
Okay.
Same situation here right now.
So
Debo will not be playing another down for the Niners, guaranteed.
So this is Negro Domus action. My man Gary says that Debo will not be a 49er by the end of the NFL draft. Is that a fair assumption?
Yes.
Okay. So speculation on Brother G's part. Tony, you said a couple of years ago, at least, as to how they were trying to devalue running backs, because we can remember running backs were getting nice fat contracts in the first round, and then all of a sudden some of those bonuses began to wane because they were disappearing from the first round. Now, Debo has played himself into a great situation. So whenever this finish is shaken out, Debo should be all right. But you brought up the dwindling return of running backs coming out of the draft. What brought all this on? Good evening.
No, I actually think it was after Zeke Elliott got picked in the first round.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it seems like that they've been, you know, trying to piggyback that, and I guess also a little bit when Peterson. But yeah, I think the line of demarcation might have been Zeke Elliott. But it's been gradual. I think it's been gradual with the NFL, and it's interesting with Debo because, you know, he's a hybrid in the sense where he can be, you know, he can be a running back, and he's also can be a wide receiver. Me personally, I look at him more as a wide receiver than I do as a running back, but. You know, I think a lot of it just has to do with the fact that
when he came here, he was a wide receiver.
If you look at your history, you know, you remember someone like a Charlie Taylor, began. I want to make sure I get it right. Now he began his career as a running back, ended his career as a wide receiver, you know, a Hall of Fame wide receiver, of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing here is that, you know, we all know that they're handing the keys over Drake this year. Yeah.
Dre Lance.
Yeah, Lance. I'm sorry. And watching too many Sixer Toronto games, I guess. But you know, look, you lose him, you lose, you know, would it be safe to say 40% of the offense?
Yeah.
That's a good chunk. That's right. And they developed him. Yeah.
Wait, gentlemen, you have a quarterback issue in San Francisco. Now, if you have a quarterback issue and you have a receiver / running back that can carry you, what are you doing?
Well, it's, let's see, dog, you know, let's be fair, and you probably know this better than us, I guess, this organization has been ass backwards for quite a while now. Even when they got to, even getting to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, you know, they basically pinned all their hopes on international porn star Jimmy G. And it's blown up in their face. And what's even worse is they can't give him away. You know?
Yep.
Well, Jimmy G, the thing, Jimmy G is playing the Colin Kaepernick card. What I mean is this. Jimmy G could have got his shoulder fixed in January, as the season was over.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do that. He waited until next month to get the operation.
True.
Which means he's got to recuperate during spring training.
Well, Gary, if he's caught,
pissed off because they wanted to get an operation in January.
Well, of course, if he expected to stay, he would have planned this earlier. That's for sure.
Right,
and
that's right.
But see, it's double fold though, because he's sabotaging himself.
Because
the thing is, and all you have to do is look at the current situation of one Michael Conforto, who had already overplayed his hand, and then had the audacity to sort of, now he's out for the rest of the year now, with a bad shoulder. Now he had to, you know, now this was a Scott Boras guy, and you know, now let's, you know, Scott Boras is supposed to be, well, you know, he's supposed to be, you know what he's doing and everything like that, but this is one time where he overplayed his hand. In a sense, because you got to know that everybody and their mama knew he was hurt. So I say that to basically say, with Garofalo, the whispers of October basically became the yelling, you know, the screaming Jay Hawkinses of December and, you know, January. In a sense, because they, you know, you knew that they weren't going to, you know, he was, what, number three, number four overall?
Pretty much.
You have to know that they didn't bring him there, you know, just to drink bad Gatorade and pat Jimmy G on the butt, you know, on the way off. They were looking at him as their future.
Right.
Now,
yep.
He could play those little silly games of, well, I'll get it done, whatever, but
mm-hmm.
All he's doing is hurting his own stock.
True.
Because, you know, now look, some sucker, I mean GM, will take him on. You know
mm-hmm.
him, you know, Mr. Progressive from Cleveland and what have you, but.
Yep.
The more and more you try to quote unquote play the martyr or try to play the angry white man, guess what? Those dollars get smaller and smaller.
They do. That's when they start with the, oh, he's unruly, you know, or he has attitude problems.
All
the brothers who don't smile have attitude problems.
Mm-hmm. The scuttlebutt is now that he's uncooperative. I'm like, get out of here, uncooperative.
No, that goes with unruly. Again, the Negroes that don't smile, you know, something's wrong with them. You know, they're so happy to be here. But, Gary, you also threw in the front office factor. Now, San Francisco has had gay players ever since Gay was gay. You know, Dave Copay, the running back. They had the big lineman there for a while who ended up losing his job because he had a fight with his boyfriend in a Chinese restaurant with soy sauce. And there have been other players who've been gay and, you know, don't make no thing. You know, we're just doing our job, and they do their job. You know, Jerry Smith with Washington and Sugar Bear Simmons. But the bottom line is nobody gives a fuck if you're doing your job. Do you truly believe that Garoppolo or Lance would give a flying fuck so-and-so is picking up the linebacker on the hot blitz? Hell no. Okay, you throw your ass in there and pick that Rob up. Thank you very much. I can go deep. You know, it's all part of what you're supposed to do. You do your job, everything is cool. And everything indicates that Deebo Samuel has done his job. As a matter of fact, he's gone beyond his job. So he deserves to get paid.
I think he's the face of the franchise, personally.
Yes. Yes. He's one of the he should be one of the core players.
I think he is. Until further note, until Lance does something or what have you. It's not Garoppolo. I don't care how many TV commercials he does. I don't look at him as the face of the franchise. And you know, it's weird. The last two times that the Niners have gone to the Super Bowl and lost, they've literally tried to blow it up afterwards. You know, you had
That's
the whole
right,
front office. You had the whole thing with Kaepernick and the front office's thing with Harbaugh. And within 3-4 years, you know, they were you know, lousy. And now, they're 2 years removed, 2-3 years removed from a Super Bowl loss. And, I hope for Lance's sake that they do better. But at this point in time right now, they're a second thought, in not only in the division, but in the NFL right now, unless they have a great draft or either they're going to make the move that they haven't, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's weird how a team that's been in two Super Bowls within the last decade has literally turned themselves into the Florida Marlins both times after they got to the Super Bowl.
They did. You know, you bring some interesting points up as we add into the mix. The Professor Fred Witty and our brother Eric Satterwhite, both are checking in. Good evening, gentlemen, and welcome to the fray. Now, Professor, for you, I need to ask the proper question here, and it has to do with what happens when a player has outplayed their contract to such a degree that they've made themselves an integral part of the team. You would think 99 times out of 100, they've welcomed themselves into the fold and the players are being worked into as part of the system needed for the team to be successful. And Eric, I know oftentimes a player can play well and still wrinkle the front office the wrong way. Now, I can't see that happening with Deebo in this case, but I get the vibe that as Gary has mentioned, sometimes the philosophy of the front office gets in the way of the success. So good evening to both of you all. And Professor, please start us off with this.
Well, good evening. Hi, y'all, and all the other good Southern salutations.
How y'all doing? That's right.
Well, off the top of my head, I can think of several guys who exceeded expectations and ended up with the front office not necessarily respecting it, and I just use my team as an example. Bell did better than expected. Remember, he was basically started as a rookie, and when it came to actually when they should have been rewarding him, I don't know the details of his contract up front, but
didn't they franchise him for like 2 straight years, Fred? If I remember,
they may have.
They franchise at least one. Yes.
Okay, at least one time. Okay.
Yeah, but my point is this: for his level of production and some other things that go on, his contract still must not have been all that high, because he didn't get paid what he wanted or should have got. Same thing with Antonio Brown and a couple of others.
Okay.
But if you understand the way the Steelers have worked over the years, in a lot of cases, they're more willing to pay defensive players, especially in their prime, than they are offensive players. You look at their, you look at the backfield that everybody knows. There's not another team in the whole league, to include Canada, the XFL, USFL. Nobody in their right mind would have had Blyer and
Harris.
Mm-hmm. Harris as your starting backfield.
Right.
With the intent of going to the Super Bowl. They ran an offense that was well suited for them too. They couldn't really, well, let's put it like this. It was rare that they outran anybody. It was rare that they actually ran over anybody. They had a line that would chop down most of the interference, so they were able to get away with that. But, that line, the line that he had, that they had to work with back then, wouldn't work today because the guys today are too big, they're too fat, and can't run. Even some of the best offensive linemen, you get past the center, you got a guy that's going to do anything over 7 steps, he can't do.
Yeah.
And in most cases, if you're trapping from the opposite side, that's at least 6 or 7 steps right there. So when you get ready to turn up and clear the way, they couldn't do it. But looking at not just running backs. I mean, they haven't had a quarterback worth a darn for the most part since then, since Terry Bradshaw.
Also true.
With the exception of some of the time with General Ben. But they have still tried to do. I mean, I don't know how, but they promised Bettis, but they were able to get a lot of mileage out of him, even though they had Parker, and for a time they had Deuce, and they've had a few others. But if you go back and think about the four Super Bowl winners, their offensive backfield, the backups were almost as good, especially Thornton.
That's right.
Were as good as the starters.
You're right. They got a lot of mileage out of Bettis.
Mm-hmm. And when Thornton played instead of Blyer or Harris, there was no real drop off.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in the kid from Baylor. Bless his heart, he couldn't hold on to the ball.
Dan Marks, the wing guy.
Mm-hmm. Him. They actually went through about four or five guys. So Worthy, my homeboy, bless his heart, who couldn't run with his head up. and most of these guys, and see with Worthy, I'd watch him play in high school. Because at least 3 times a season, he played here locally because he was in the conference. And, his running style teams when he was at, I think he went to Georgia, his running style teams.
Okay.
But, just looking at other teams, a lot of teams have missed the boat on good players. They undervalue them coming in, which – I mean, and you got to understand this from the business perspective. Think about it. You don't find a lot of times that guys in any position other than quarterback really I mean, that's where the underperformance has come with almost every overpayment early on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yep.
Unless he's black, he's gonna get nailed, you know, to the cross.
You make a good point with that, Professor. You make a good point with that because he is black, they're taking the assumption that they'll get whatever they get out of him. And that usually means
he's too athletic.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know,
so they forget about the other stuff.
And think about it. He's too. Think through the rationale here. He's too athletic, but we want him. We want him to have escapability.
That's right.
We want him to be able to move in the pocket. Duh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know. Okay. With a few DCs out there who are smart enough to guess what you can do. And know how to lay on you so you can stop what you can do, which means the offense is going to have to do something different or totally out of characteristic, like run the ball occasionally. and all those things that they don't, for whatever reason, that they seem not to like about black quarterbacks, white guys who can move. The whole system is set up to highlight what they can do standing in the pocket, as if standing in the pocket. I mean, I heard a quarterback, quarterback from Kansas City. He was so flustered because the quarterback from Houston actually ran for a first down. I mean, and then two plays later, he ran for another first down, but before he could go into the slide, guess what? He got torpedoed.
Right.
And what's the next thing? Oh, he needs better blocking. Okay. Which is it?
It's a good point. It's also something to be considered in terms of, again, what the franchise believes is part of their organization that deserves to be kept. Eric? I
yes,
leave
sir.
That with you and the front offices. First of all, good evening. And secondly, you know, do they really value Debo as somebody they think will be a 49er down the road? Because he's just starting. This would be his second contract. So he's actually at the peak of his career right now.
Yeah. Thank you for the viewpoint. I did catch, T-Mac's statement on, face of the franchise. So based on the local environment and the face of the franchise, it is Garoppolo, and then it's George Kittle, and then it's Nick Bosa. Those are the faces. Everyone else is good players around them, including Samuel. Right? So Garoppolo gets the national media attention, with Subway commercials and his affiliation, with the Niners. Kittle's multiple national commercials. So they represent, the face of the franchise in Bosa. And so what you have in the Bay Area, you have a strong Italian populace, let alone at the Bartolo family who owns them, right?
That's
Garoppolo, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Jimmy G is the face of that franchise, regardless of the production. Now, with Samuel, what took place, if you remember the Packer game as well as the Ram game, it was overusage. He was getting pounded. He had to literally drag himself off the field several times. The second time at each game he came out, it looked like he should not have came back on the field. I was like, man, no way. Because the way Kittle and Samuel play, they're going to bring contact when they catch the rock, runs after catch. And so what the other teams decide to do, they decide to load up. Okay, yeah, you're going to get your yardage, but we're banging. And we're banging hard. And they were banging him hard, right? So, the footage, he probably played like six games of contact in two games, the way they used him. Right?
Yeah.
He was getting claimed, man, because when you watch Kittle play, which finally he got injured and missed some games, the way they're so physical, usually takes four guys to take him down. You never see him go backwards. So they realized that's the play. The Rams and the Packers were teeing off strong.
Right.
So Samuel took a lot of contact. Those 49er trainers, because this is what's not missing. You have your fan general manager who sees that. Mm-hmm. Then you have your general managers, right,
yes.
who, like, look at the mm-hmm. torque, who look at how much was put upon them, who look at those medical reports. That's a weekly review,
mm-hmm.
you know? And he was getting rattled. So when you do that, can we max out? Plus the coordinator left to become the coach of it, the Dolphins, right? So ultimately speaking, you know, when you start, you know, putting together the system, is this how we're going to play next year? And are we going to get the same production? Because the way they used Samuel was over usage because they really didn't have no offensive, you know, foundation because the running game wasn't
That's
working.
True.
So they were using him, right, like a running back. He took
yeah.
on a lot of ish last year physically.
19,
so
19,
that's a consideration outside the football concept when you're in the front office, you know. And so
mm-hmm.
having, you know, literally, you know, nurture some cats that end up becoming NBA GMs or still out there
yep.
doing contracts for NBA teams, as well as myself being a minor league in the ABA GM.
Yep.
It's those things, you know, that you're looking at when you make the decision, right? So the fan base, oh, he did this, but that wear and tear he took during the playoffs and how he's training and what the medical reports are showing and what the treatments are training,
right.
Mm-hmm. hard to see he's going to be the same kind of player. And the system they use is going to be revamped again because that system was not good enough to win the Super Bowl. So
True.
Therefore, even though he got all that production from him, the value in how they're putting together the team is just going to be in a long-term mix because if they go with Trey, you know, it still needs a little more timing there, you know, and a little more play.
Mm-hmm.
Shanahan may not be the guy to bring him along, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
so Shanahan likes to run the rock. So they were using Debo like a back out of the backfield with those, you know, short yardage
right.
plays
mm-hmm.
and things like
mm-hmm.
that, you know. And so, you know, so in other words, the evaluation becomes, well, how are we going to use him? Oh, he has value. But is he
mm-hmm.
an all-pro receiver that we can depend on just based on the one-year usage? They overuse. I've seen Garoppolo when he, you know, during the Packer game when I said, man, dude can't keep coming back after this contact. He was like, shit, teeing
yep.
off every time
yep.
he got in the backfield, right? And hey, look, that tundra in
yes,
Wisconsin was kind of frozen, right? It was cold
oh, yeah.
out there that day. So, you know what I'm saying? And I was like looking at the game and I'm, you know, again, we're not looking at it from that fan base. And I'm just saying, well, he had to take himself out. We know it was kind of, you know, you can have so much dog in you. You know what I'm saying? Where
yeah.
it works against
mm-hmm.
you, where it works against you. You know,
yep.
it's like when Kobe was a Laker real quick, you know, D'Antoni was the worst coach for him because he couldn't rein Kobe in. Kobe's like, yo, we're going to put you in a minute restriction. That's how he tore his Achilles. He's got all hurt, things of that matter, because D'Antoni
right.
couldn't manage that Mamba, so-called man attitude. That becomes your worst enemy, too.
Mm-hmm.
So Samuel's style of play, that recklessness, that physicality,
mm-hmm.
the Niners did everything they could max it to get to that, you know, conference final. And they
That's
just ran out
team.
Of gas. So now they're revamping the team. It wasn't good enough to win the Super Bowl. They're questioning who's going to be the quarterback. They're wondering what kind of system Shanahan's going to play. We'll see what they do in the draft tomorrow night. They're probably going to look for some wide receivers. You
mm-hmm.
know, and so,
Tony?
Right, guys that can stretch the field. Because they got Kittles. They feel good with their tight end game, run game, this, that, and the other. So Samuels can play, but is he a max field guy? That's where the question comes into play. Not because
they should have had that answer last year.
You're looking at it from that general manager level, and you get the medical reports, and you see what took place, and all these changes to the system. Right now, it's just a question mark.
Yeah, they should have got that answer last year. Tony, that's a great point Eric brings up. You know, have they finally ascertained that Debo Samuel is like Bosa, is like Kittle, part of the team that they need to keep? Do you believe that San Francisco believes this is one of their guys, or are they going to let him go? Tony, are you there?
Mike.
Yes.
Something else to be considered with what Eric was saying.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, when it comes to these coaches, as well as quarterbacks, Remember the piece of wisdom that was that's often dropped in our community? When a person shows you how they are the first
believe
time.
Them.
Believe
mm-hmm.
them. Okay. What has Shanahan done everywhere he's ever been?
Choke out.
See, he's been, I know he's been to Denver. I know he's been to D.C. And he's probably
Atlanta.
D.C. Okay, that's another place. Now, where has he ever really won?
Not really.
When it comes to these white guys.
And real quick to that point, Fred, to your point, and hold that point real quick. Shanahan is the proverbial deer in the headlines when the block gets hot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Total deer in the headlights, man. I watched this guy just choke out games. I mean, the play calling he did against New England after getting that lead in the Super Bowl?
Yep.
All right. When he was running the Falcons offense? I mean, they had it cranked up. I mean, he toned it down to, you know, you was figuring he was getting Ben Simmons money on the side.
That's right. They never asked him why he didn't try to kick that damn field goal. Why did he have to throw
that
the ball three
half,
times?
Mike, they were like, the second half was beyond. I thought Woody Hayes had reincarnated.
Hell yeah. It's like, what? No, you're right.
I mean, three
it's like, it like
dust
it was a,
bullshit.
Yeah. It was like a fair complete. Kick the field goal, you're 28 points.
You know, because to piggyback on what Eric was saying about, you know, these different ones, you know, they've already shown you what they do. They showed you how they think. And when he gets, you know, when he was in Atlanta, which is kind of in our market, you know, you see a little more of him. And at that time, I think the team in Charlotte was on the rise.
Okay.
And what, you know, the kind of things you would see him say was, oh, we're going to run like this. We're going to pass like this. And this is only, you know, and basically they don't have a quarterback who plays like this. They don't have the running backs to run like this. They don't have the line scheme to run this or block this. And so you have mismatched systems in place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody wants that, what's his name, Mandarich, that was out of Michigan, that was the lineman.
Yeah, Tony Mandarich, out of Michigan State.
Who basically got the big fat white boy thing started back in the day. And since then, all the guys had to be over 300. They're on some kind of enhancement, but nobody knows what it is. And it's and so somebody knows what it is, wing, you know, it's okay to do that.
Yep.
And as opposed to going out, say, somewhere like Tennessee State, Grambling, and get some of them big black guys that's big like that already. All that other southern fried chicken and stuff. No, they're going to get these white guys who already slow, who can't run. And what do? They go out there, and you get some black guys on defense who can stop anybody. But hey, we don't want that on our. We don't want that kind of play on offense. We want somebody to get in the trenches and do all this. And see
that's the Nick Saban protocol because all his linemen are brothers primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Somebody Saban figured that out. I mean, the kid
Most importantly, you know, and this shows you how out of touch the NFL is. They emphasize speed at the for running backs and defensive backs and wide receivers and stuff. You know, the quote unquote skill positions. But for those guys to be able to do what they do, you've got to have guys maybe not just as fast, but guys that are nimble. On their feet.
The best teams do have the best O line stuff, right? They get
the teams
that win, you know, who take the Jonathan Ogdens, right? Like the Ravens and you know, just put him on left tackle and leave him there for 20 years, like Orlando Pace and, or, you know, those kind of brothers that played it from, you know, Munoz, you know, the Mexican cat, you know, for Cincinnati. You just put them on, you know, the side of the tackle. Those teams that win, they use those, they use those Rock of Gibraltar philosophies, right? Cause it, the, and that's why linemen still typically are drafted, you know, in the top 10 many times, right? Because they know you
they
need that O-line.
Exactly.
Exactly.
No matter what
And see the Niners motif, and under the Shanahan, is built off their defensive line, right? Because, you know, I mean, they had they let Buckner go to Indianapolis, right? And they rotate eight linemen a game. You know, Eric Armstead, whoever, you know, who I've known for a long time personally, is out there. And then Bosa, who's been the All-Pro, right, year after year, you know. And so that's, their strength is their D-line and how they rotate their defensive line under Salah. And they constantly release pressure. So Shanahan's into this physical style. So, you know, I mean, it happened when he went to the Jets. I think four Niners blew out their knees and shit. They tried to blame it on the field when they visited MetLife. You know what I mean? And so he's lost his backs, right, you know, for a few years, too, to injuries as well, because they have this hit the whole style of just total impact and grind, and that's how they train him to play. And they've been able to be effective in that. It's kind of – he's trying to follow that Denver motif, you know, when his father coached with Terrell Davis and the way they used to run the rock in Denver. Denver could find a guy that's just been on three kegs of beer and he rushed for 1,000 yards the next year, and we may not see him 3 years later.
That's true.
Remember that? I mean, the Broncos could run the friggin' rock, and they had all kinds of backs. He had some, Dex Military went out there. He ran off a couple of 1,000 yards.
Mike Anderson.
Again, three running backs that ran for at least 1,000 yards with the blocking scheme that the linemen on Denver used, and used to piss a lot of the defensive linemen off because they were clipping catches.
You're right. And so he tried. So he's following Pops. You know, I mean, the difference between and this. See, let's chop this up real quickly because it's relevant. And Fred brought it up with the Shanahan analysis and the coaching because it all starts front office too. And that is, it's like the cat McVay, right? And so McVay is the golden child of John McVay, who was a longtime front office person with the Giants and mainly the 49ers, right? So he had the golden – so he didn't rise through the ranks and shit and, you know, shag, you know, punts and, you know, in the hot preseason training. I mean, he was on his way to be a head coach because of the connections, right? Same thing with Shanahan. You know, the difference with McVay and Shanahan, at least McVay, you know, can, you know, grounds a little more, where Shanahan is total silver spoon from his daddy. You know, McVay did not work directly under Shanahan to get his rise to be a head coach. So Shanahan, you know, these guys who didn't come through the ranks and didn't rise and didn't grind to go up, you know, they talked that Rooney Rule stuff. Shanahan was totally gifted this 49er job. And now you're there. And you don't have the roots of the grind to really grind it out. And therefore, when those games get tight, Shanahan's total deer in the headlights.
Yes. Yes. That's a good analogy.
And unfortunately, good, bad, or indifferent, his legacy is still probably going to be 28-3.
Well,
I'm sorry, I missed the legacy part.
Oh, his legacy, 28-3.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, absolutely.
That's going to be until he wins one that he's, you know, that's going to be his legacy. So, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. I mean,
Niners beat the Rams, right? I mean, he coached. That was another flub. He just that was a flub job, coach.
Remember his first one. You know, he goes up against the sweater, and the greatest offense, you know, in Western civilization, scores three big ones in the Super Bowl.
Yep. Oh Lord, you know, Tony rightfully calls this at the Underpants Olympics when they talk about that are put out there for everybody to see. So if somebody is developing a system they know exactly what they want. Now, if we bring this back to when we started with Debo, you know, running backs have been ferreted out of systems because they don't use them except in rare exceptions. You know, you run as an afterthought now instead of, because with fantasy football and everything else that's laid out there, it's about the throw and the catch. And you cannot have the throw without the catch. So you must have wide receivers. And most teams are now looking at wide receivers the way running backs used to be looked at, which means they get this bonus money and not the running backs, because they expect the running backs will be used in, what, 2 or 3 years? Can we say Todd Gurley? So there's no question about it that the focus has shifted, which would make me think if Debo knows that wide receivers are making more money than running backs, as my man Reggie would say, how in the hand sandwich would he go out of his way to take the responsibility of running the ball in addition to trying to catch the ball? Because it seems
Mike, it's almost like a North Dallas 40 thing where, when I say I want to make some money, well, no, you're a running back. And then we want to specialize you as wide receiver, but you don't want to pay me like a wide receiver. And it's like, you know, it's that constant cat and mouse, and the players are even more so aware of it. And you know, you brought up the whole thing of fantasy football fantasy sports in general, which now has an incestuous relationship with every sport now, good, bad, and indifferent, but even more so with football because, you know, again, because they have pushed it so that, you know, it's everybody passes. Yep. Third and one, let's pass the ball. Second and one, let's pass the ball. First and five, why don't we pass the ball while we're at it? You know, and look, I get it. I mean, even when they changed the rules in 80 to make it a pass, it was never as crazy then. I mean, in a sense, those Charger teams stood out because they, you know, whatever. But even they had a Chuck Muncy. They had a James Brooks. They would have a Lionel Train. They'd have always would have a running back that would offset all of that. And the fact now that they literally, bell bottoms, blue suede shoes, and running backs are basically all in the same category now.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, but Sam, you're right. I mean, you know, you break a good point because they had him in the back, so he can't last. I mean, I was like, is this Bronco Nagurski revisited? They were handing him the rock. They were running for patterns in this short place. They were totally just taking everything they could get out of him just to advance because he was only their true offensive weapon in their play style. I mean, Garoppolo, average passing games. If Garoppolo gets in a scenario where he's gone 5 games of 30 or more pass attempts, that's rare. They run the rock in Frisco. Right. Yeah. That's the Shanahan motif out of Denver. Right. They don't go up top a lot. And so when they do, they're looking for Kittle, right? And then Samuel gets mixed in, and then sometimes the rookie, I forgot his name, I can't picture him, you know, young kid, you know, who was, you know, supposed to
Mitchell.
Be the guy
Mitchell
that's
was,
threat.
I know you're talking about.
Yeah, number one, he had a single-digit number or something like that.
Uh-huh.
You know,
he used the last three or four weeks. Yes.
Mm. Yeah, they'll complain about, you know, all the drops he was having earlier. But, you know, the kid can ball, but they don't go to him enough. But when they did, they offset. So their style of football, their OC, the way they were in the offense, is a different look. And so the question is, again, not fan GM, not rah-rah system by, I like how he plays, he deserves this GM. When you start doing the analysis of what that conference looks like and the shift in the conference and who's winning, and the Rams become the flavor of the month club on how they run their offense because they're the Super Bowl champs.
And so with that being said, and what the defenses are doing, and you look at what's happening with Arizona, there's questions there perhaps. But you're looking at, you know, that layout, and now we've seen what how they're going to use Samuel. They're going to load up. It's going to be different the following year. So they got to almost recraft again. GM's gone. That system didn't work. Debo took on a lot of shit. So when they start drafting his contract, their motif is building that D-line, that O-line, and running the rock. So those become their priorities, and they still got a coin flip on who's going to be their quarterback. So
should
Samuel,
be. That's right.
Despite his balling and everything we see and what he represented, his style of play is that forever, ever. Is that
yes,
can we get one more year out of that, two more years? He wants his long-term deal. He wants his guaranteed bonus. How can we split that loop several ways and match it? That's the NFL, man, not for long. And so we've seen worse. And so, yeah, it's not really a done deal that it's going to be a Niner situation or it gets down to the wire where you got to take that one-year deal.
That's right. And this brings two more words into the lexicon. Guaranteed bonus. You know,
there you go.
Tony, now they're throwing in guaranteed money. Now, it's one thing when you can extend the contract. But when you say guaranteed money, if we say Tony McClain signed a three-year contract with the Giants with $22 million
guaranteed
money.
Exactly. What was guaranteed? Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So now it's the new flavor, the saver. Guaranteed cash means you've made it. And, Fred, I don't know why they always do this, but every fucking draft they always talk about who the quarterback – most of the world,
shit,
or the running back who have been devalued, when everybody who's got some sense and played a couple of downs football knows by day one, I will say day two, at the very, very least, any football lineman, offensive or defensive, worth their salt is gone. And why do they not mention this?
Why don't they mention it? Because everybody has this notion that it's a magic act. You have,
mm-hmm.
It's always the quarterback, first of all. And how many mediocre quarterbacks do we know who played it smart, who understood what his limitations were, and learn how to maximize what qualities they may have had, and went out and did what they could, you know, and did their thing. Those quarterbacks are usually not around long. I mean, that's one of the analogy that NFL is for, not for long, because they would rather have instead of having one of those what we would generally call today a quality backup quarterback. They want him, but they don't want to get to him. They don't want to pay him. And what do we have next? We go back and get some flash in the pan that everybody gets all quote unquote excited about. And at the end of the day, what you end up with is a hope and a prayer for the starting quarterback don't get hurt. And if he does, nobody to back him up.
Exactly.
And when you have that, when you have that situation, what do you have next? You go from 6-0, or 1-6, or 6-1, based on not only what your OC knows how to game plan for to get the most out of you, you know. Not to harp on a Steelers, but, you know, you go back and you think about the Terry Bradshaw years versus other quarterbacks. There was only a few quarterbacks that he played against that were good enough to beat him because he had what? It wasn't that he had that great of skill and all that other thing. He had a slamming defense.
Yes,
a six-man front line. Backed up by four or five linebackers who could start.
True.
And at times they did start. And go back and count the Hall of Famers.
Right. At every skill position. I mean, you know, Denzel Green, the linebacker, Lambert and Ham, secondary shell, and Blunt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to
piggyback on what Fred was talking about earlier with the whole Bell thing. Bell gave them something that was basically back to the was an old school ball.
Yes,
because
it was.
Look, the Steelers even when they won the four in 6 years, basically, the first 2 years they were more of a running team. It was more centered with Harris and Blyer. Then when they won the second back-to-back, it was the Blyer and Harris were still there, but because like the rest of the league, they started throwing the ball. So you started seeing more of Stallworth and Swan and Benny Cunningham or what have you.
Right.
The thing that Bell gave them was Bell was like, to me, he was the poor man's Roger Craig in the sense where if you gave him the ball enough, he could catch 100 balls and he could also do 1,000 yards. But they were so intent on
– What was Bell's first name?
Le'Veon Bell.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
They went out of their way to sort of blackball him, and you know he did some things off the field that you know went to whatever. But in a sense, though, they haven't been able to recreate him because they've gone. You know, now the kid that they just drafted last year,
Najee.
I'm gonna see how long is it gonna be. Now I wanna see how long is it gonna be before they start doing the poison pen on him.
Right.
The Steelers need to figure out, you know, the Steelers really need to figure out what they want to do on offense anyway. The Mike Tomlin motif is to keep it close and then beat you with a field goal late. You know, I mean that's the motif.
Right.
And when he decided to go up top, you know, with Roethlisberger when AB was at his peak, right, and they were putting up astronomical numbers, their D wasn't good. But they had enough offensive talent last year. Ben was just done. I mean, he was throwing all those wounded ducks, man. Guys were open. He's underthrowing them, short throwing them. He rode that horse way too long, the Roethlisberger horse, way too long, right? But that's been his guy since he's been there. We got to find out, Kenny, you know, how do you coach it up now with your guy now? Whoever's going to be your quarterback is going to be your first-star quarterback because your whole existence was associated with Roethlisberger.
Okay, and backtrack on the Steelers organization and how they've been with quarterbacks. They stuck with Bradshaw long after they should have. They stuck with Ben. There was a guy that played Bubby Brister.
Oh,
they
good should, Lord.
They should never even have drafted him, but
they did. They had the lean years. You know, they had the Charlie Batch years. They had the Neil O'Donnell years. You know, they had the Cordell Stewart years. You know, but when you look at the Super Bowl Steeler teams, it was Bradshaw, Roethlisberger. You know, O'Donnell got in there and he threw a few wounded ducks to that cat from the Cowboys. Larry Brown, they got the easiest Super Bowl MVP known to man. And so, you know, I mean, damn. I mean, fuck, Mike. I mean, that's a Super Bowl MVP. I mean, Boston directly between his numbers. Okay. They had to give it to somebody, I guess. But the thing being is, you know, when you shift out of that back to the equation where Mike kicked it all off, you know, with the Samuel usage contract, player evaluation, and going into the draft tomorrow, you know, segueing
and
into
that's
going to
matter.
That's
going to matter.
Didn't the Cowboys – let me ask a question real quick. Didn't the Cowboys cut bait with the wide receiver that, you know, was originally with the Raiders?
No, they re-upped him. He's still there.
Oh, they did re-up him.
They re-upped him.
That was the craziest ish known to man that they were thinking about letting him go because Dak's numbers always go through the ceiling when he's in the lineup.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, see that's your player evaluator.
Did their homework. That's mm-hmm. right.
Well, see, that's you blame that right. on your player evaluator.
Yeah, they were talking about that for a while, like they wanted to cut Vegas like Dez, right? And I was like, are they out of their mind?
See,
I mean, the Raiders finally screwed up. Sorry, G, when they left him go, and then they sold my man that became the defensive lineman with the Bears, the
that's
All-Pro
right.
there.
Yeah.
I forgot his name.
Oh, yeah, Khalil Mack.
Number 52?
Yeah. Khalil Mack.
Khalil Mack. I mean, man, these are. I mean, that was back to Gruden's dumbness. Again, these franchises, we've seen these cockamamie ideas. Debo, you know, in reality, needs a contract, should re-up. The effort's been put in. It's for them to figure out how they got to use him because he's already performed.
Mm-hmm. But see, now the aura of guaranteed bucks changes all of that, because if Fred is sitting there saying, well, wait a minute, I've been all pro 2 years in a row. You know, my contract's coming up. Yeah, you want to extend my contract? I can live with that. Kevin Patrick Ferrar is coming into the mix. I can live with that. But if I'm all this and I keep that quarterback's jersey dry, you'll have to keep my pockets wet with cash. Now it's about the guaranteed buckets. If you can't give me no guaranteed money, we're going to have a problem. And I think now guaranteed money has gone beyond the quarterback position to every other position on the team. If the line is
and Mike,
to your
point real quick,
yes.
with the guarantee, that's the first thing we looked at with the Cheetah when he went to Miami.
Uh-huh. That's right. 72
right?
million. Guaranteed.
They threw him a fat deal, right? And then but a lot of that loose guarantee.
Yeah. And see, if nothing else, giving him that guaranteed money shows you that while they probably have the wrong coach coaching that team right now, they do recognize the fact that if he gives Tua some weapons, he'll take it to the next level. Because I think,
And T-Mac, that ties back into the Debo thing because, listen, I mean, what else could a Cheetah have done in KC? Come on. And he's not a Cheetah.
Yeah,
no one.
Really?
You know, the Chiefs were not going to break him off that money. They took all those draft picks.
That's right.
If you're the Niners, you're looking at that.
Exactly.
That's right.
And what's crazy is, Eric, I'm willing to bet you Mahomes would have said, hey, I'll take a cut to keep my man.
Yeah.
They didn't even give him the option. They just was like, because he was just as stunned
unload.
As everybody else.
We unload. Yeah. I mean, they looked at the value of them draft picks. They thought they were pulling one of them Jimmy Johnson, Herschel Walker deals.
Yeah. Everybody's trying to – everybody wants to do that, but you got to understand – so, as arrogant as whatever Jimmy Johnson was, if you ever get a chance to read his book, Turning the Thing Around, it's really interesting because, see, the thing was, everybody talks about the 1-15. You know, see, people don't realize how impactful that 1-15 season was for them because the thing he was doing, you know, every week he'd bring in eight guys and sign one or two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his way. He basically taught himself player evaluation by doing that. And that's the thing, you know, that's still something, especially now when you're with the injury factor and the specialization and everything else. Now, remember, he was doing it pre-hard cap and free agency. Now, see, now you can still do it, but you literally have to have.
To your point, team, back about the player, but see, it goes back to, I think the keys to that language was the player evaluation because you're pulling Larry Allen out of Sonoma State.
You know, you're pulling Big E. Where did Eric Williams go to school? I know he went to HBCU, right?
Central State, right?
So you're pulling Eric Williams out of Central State. And then, you know, you stack your other defensive line, you know, with Nate Newton too, right, Famu? So when you start looking at where he was pulling and building their team and their offensive line power to what Fred was talking about, when you can kind of get, you know, those heavy load brothers from the South that carry that weight naturally, you know, guys like can do cartwheels, flips and shit, breakdowns and not break a sweat in those bodies.
And remember, remember, he was coaching at the U where you do a 4-5 and you're considered, you know, a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest.
That's right.
You're right. That's exactly, you know, I mean, right. Exactly. But I think the key language you made there, and what Mike was talking about earlier, and Fred, and you know, it all comes down to the talent evaluation, because he's not taking these cats out of SC, Notre Dame, that flame out. Right, because you know they went to certain schools, University of Texas, them Longhorns. Right, he's looking at how he built his squad out, and what universities the brother went to. You know that was really putting in work that he got all those draft picks for, and that's what you got to deal. Like, what's the cat that you know was a defensive lineman that you know almost had a touchdown and got caught in the end zone.
Seventh round pick.
It was those baseline dudes that was the, you know, the so-called those dogs. How about them Cowboys? It was those guys, not your glitz and glamour dudes like Emmett and Michael and Troy. You know, it was those cats that made up the bulk of those Cowboys team, like Darren Woodson and them dudes.
If you ever want to watch a great documentary, NFL Network, they have one on that offensive line, the Great Wall of Dallas, I don't think either one of them were picked. I think the highest one pick might have been. A third or fourth round, and then you had a couple like 2A was a vagabond free agent.
Eric Williams would have been a higher draft choice. But the long and short of it was this: to mention what you guys said, you added with this bonus money. If there was any time when offensive linemen could have walked up to the front office and just said, "Fill it up with cash," it was the Super Bowl when Nate Newton and Eric Williams throttled Buffalo. I've seen a lot of football in my time, but I've never seen a time. But Cornelius Bennett is still calling for his mama because they beat that boy. I'm serious. Nate Newton and Eric Williams.
Hey, Mike, to your point, Bruce Smith is still saying what had happened was.
Oh, man.
Patrick is there. They ran a play six fucking times. The same play. I know they ran the same play each time, and it got to a point where this lady in the customer office saying, "They're gonna run the same play." Yeah, you know damn well they're gonna run the same play, Shereen Williams, because you've seen it. Six fucking times they buried Buffalo. I mean,
It's like the old Packers sweep, power sweep. You know it's coming, but you still got to stop it. If you don't stop it.
What's interesting to that point, I forgot the Giants defensive lineman, man, you know, that was playing at the time. He said he lined up against Larry Allen, and Larry Allen was slow like a train to let him know the play was coming. He's literally walking like
Larry Allen. Larry Allen let the world know he was for real when Darian Connor intercepted a pass. His 340-pound ass was streaking downfield. He caught him. That was even more impressive than DK Metcalf catching the kid from St.
Larry Allen was something else,
Larry Allen was no fucking joke.
Larry Allen was about as close as you could get to John Henry in this lifetime.
And the most feared lineman in the weight room. And then
Oh, man, yes.
And out of the city of Compton.
That's right. Barbara Bush could run the distance behind Ari Allen Butler in a boat car. No shit. There's no way they would touch her. Not even when they
have Mike, I was going to, first of all, good evening. I was going to say, even though I hate to say it, but it's true, when you look at the history of the NFL, and we talked about play development. The Cowboys were the lead in that for many years.
Right.
That changed in the early 1970s when the Kansas City Chiefs decided to bring them brothers in, and the Pittsburgh Steelers decided to bring them brothers in, and that had to be reevaluated over a period of time.
Exactly.
I knew it clearly because one of my good friends who since passed at Ohio State, John Hicks, wanted to go to Kansas City.
Oh, yeah, I remember John Hicks.
Big John.
Right.
Or
as he's known affectionately in Giantown, holding on Hicks.
You know why? Because he should have been playing guard rather than tackle. But you're right. I just agree with what everybody's saying, man. It's, in terms of play evaluation and what you're going to get. And I believe that now what players that we just mentioned, received from Kansas City and other players, some players are going to get that money they deserve because, believe me, there is an underbelly of guys reevaluating the money that they give these quarterbacks. I don't care what you say because of the fact that you need it.
It's such an intriguing thing because this is where you put your front office cap back on, right? And there's the business angle of the salary, and then there's the salary itself, right? So what the fan base attitude is like, okay, wow, he signed a good contract. Look at the money. This is the contract there. The ownership mentality is like this. The value of my franchise is evaluated on my player salary. Mm-hmm. So the more I pay, the more value I have for my franchise.
Mike, that's the perfect segue because it leads into your Lord and Savior, Jeff Lurie, whose goal every year is to win the Super Bowl. Not the physical Super Bowl, the cap Super Bowl. His one, his whole thing is to, like Eric said, keep the value of the franchise as high, but keep costs low. Now they did an Ice Cube a few years back, messed around and won a Super Bowl, and it threw his whole game off because. Wait a minute. We weren't supposed to win. That's the wrong Super Bowl. I don't want to win this Super Bowl. I want to win another Super Bowl.
I couldn't tell my daughter
that. Here you go to that basic math, right? I don't care if it's a college university business, right? A newspaper business, whatever it may be. The number one expense, number one valuation of your business outside the product is your payroll and insurance. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in these states,
that's exactly right.
Things, these public policies, right, where we can like literally up, hey, how much are they paying their sanitation people in this town as a public report, right? Because we know the taxpayer dollars are here. How do you offset that? I mean, the United States government collect now. The ultimate math is the United States government who collects $1 trillion in taxes every friggin' quarter.
Come on.
So there shouldn't be a pothole behind an abandoned strip mall in the Appalachian Mountains with that kind of money.
That's the evaluation of
your tax base. So you take it to a franchise, universes, the valuation of
exposure.
So when they create these cap rules, it's not only, so people get caught up in the player salary thing all the time. Oh, he's getting the money.
They do.
No. You got to pay that salary. You're putting the valuation of your franchise in those salaries. So they set these numbers to not only meet payroll. That's why these agents before the last cap deal in the NBA, you know, the agents got really good because they just knew that, okay, this team, they knew this player was due for a contract. He was
Thank
a shooting
you.
Guard. He was the only shooting guard out there that teams need, and everyone else was locked up. And so based on the fact that he was one of the few positions, even though he's never going to be an all-star, he's never going to be that contribution, he's entitled to mid-level exception. So what teams have the mid-level exception? Okay, these four teams have the mid-level exceptions. Two of these need a shooting guard. They're going to have to pay us this salary regardless of the fact this player can't play worth a fuck because he qualifies for the mid-level exception. That's how it works.
Thank you. And that's what the agent is supposed to fucking do. Look out for his player's interest. He has to.
Now,
he has to be able to have
in,
the
though, Mike. And then what happens is he'll never see that contract again. That's how
they
got it.
And they
he'll never
it.
See
they
that
know
contract
it. That's
again.
Why, that's why this guaranteed money is so important. It will expose how competent or incompetent a front office is. If you don't know which players
are
in the
NBA, we see incompetence all the time, right? Because we're watching players literally got these huge contracts, not even fucking playing.
Yeah.
And so it's just a rip-off job. But the trade-off is this, though. They pay them that money, and so the players really aren't losing. If they decide to, you know, dress like a Juju Bee or a Skittle set on the sidelines
of
and
course.
Never play, right?
And
get that loot, look like a tangerine mixed with, you know, an avocado. That's fine. And the thing is,
Uncle Ben's ears are burning, and I'm not talking about rice.
Well, I'm going to add something to what Eric told
and
me.
You know what? Nobody
knows about
it. Because the thing is, these owners are leveraging the value of their organization.
If an
NBA team is worth $1 billion and I break you off $20 million, I'm valuating my project. They people get caught up in the salary. They don't understand the valuation of the business as part of
why
these contracts are doled out. These people are anything but stupid.
Sports economics 101. Is making X amount of money, then the team is bringing in, say it with me, X.
But also, too, it's this thing where, check this out real quickly, too. So that's one level of it. So depending on what county or city you live in, right, these players are W-2 employees. They're not 1099 employees. Hello, people. FICA is being taken out. Your regular guy who's working at Kinko's or some other place, CVS, Walgreens, who is a W-2 employee. NBA players, professional athletes, W-2 employees.
Exactly.
They're not 1099 employees.
Welcome to Madison Square Garden. Can I help you?
No lie. Yeah. Literally.
It's Tyreek Hill,
check your email, and we just sent you your W-2 for 2005.
Now, if Tyreek Hill moves to Florida, that $72 million he picked up as a bonus, he doesn't spend one fucking dime in state tax. With a $72 million contract, that way,
but you know, in Florida, they got other ways to get that dollar.
Okay.
You don't have the state that as a standard rule and procedure, but the standard, got something for you, though.
Don't get me cussing about the Panthers, please. We're just talking about the governor, not the individual.
That's a whole dichotomy, but we're talking about the states that don't have an alleged income tax. They got other ways. Like, for Texas, it doesn't have a state income tax.
Yeah.
But their real estate rules and their real estate laws are very unique.
Make the problem. The schematic end of that make it real tricky. I was going to ask something to what you guys are saying concerning the owners, but something that people don't really ever think about. And I talked to my brother was a 48-year Wall Street guy. He couldn't believe it when I told him to tell you guys. With the money we talk about, the value of a team and players, What you don't know, unless you're around teams, is the amount of guys that don't like the game but make enough money over a short period of time to get out the game and move right on. You would be astounded.
Well, you're 100% Patrick, because you know, in the NBA, this is the motto. I did not hate basketball until I started getting paid to play basketball.
Oh, shit.
That is a standard mantra.
Because I really like the game. You'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. It's just me. And it exists today. So we talk about the value of a team. Well, that could be some of an item line on the team. Okay, this guy can play. He wants to play. Okay, that's added to the a line item to the team. So, okay, he's not going to play along anyway.
It's a money dump. It's a total money dump. Because if you have a fixed cap, you have a luxury tax. So you have this is your way. You're going to spice this money up. And I can speak to Luke really clearly amongst 15 players, right? 12 can dress. You can have 15 under contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get this two-way deal with the G League now with some really voodoo mathematics, technology shit. And so you've got to find ways to dump that money, and you got to find a way to value your project. So if you got a bunch of people eating the luxury tax, which is stupid, and some teams do because they quote-unquote want to win, but the trade talk to that in terms of these local cable contracts that they could get the money for broadcasting rights. Like the Lakers got that deal. And,
which will change.
They got this billion-dollar deals down there in SoCal.
Yes,
so they can afford
yes.
to pay and watch
yes.
Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook, LeBron James
yes.
not make the playoffs, you know,
yes.
talk to their stylists before the game so they can put a little haberdasher in the sidelines and laugh mm-hmm. and talk during the course of the game while the Lakers are going to get the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Frank Vogel is the one who eats it because the coach is not getting that loot. He's recyclable. So the Lakers can have, or some teams can have, 3 to 4 guys still under contract and pay them these coaches, right? They fire a coach, bring another coach in. Mike Brown was getting – the weirdest shit was when Mike Brown was getting paid by the Cleveland Cavaliers. To sit on the Golden State
and
Warriors
the Lakers.
As an assistant coach.
Yep.
You don't care. He don't care who wins.
So the Cleveland Cavaliers was paying Mike Brown to kick their ass.
Somebody's doing that right now. God, I'm thinking who it is. Somebody's doing that right now. Oh God, I can't think of it.
Let me add your well-fed ass to the discourse here, and I hope this girl likes their soul food. Now, you know, the guaranteed money is a big issue with front offices, but when a team is crying broke or is in issue like Vegas was, how does that affect the front line? How does that affect them decide who to keep and who to throw away?
Oh, that's easy. That's easy. Who doesn't want to play the game?
The Raiders, they don't care what happened this year because they got the path in Vegas, they got the Super Bowl in Vegas, they don't care.
That's true.
You could almost hear Davis.
The Raiderland is Mark Davis.
Yeah.
Well, it's true.
Mark Davis is the one who really don't give a fuck. They had to beg him to fire Gruden because they had to pull him away from the table first.
See, that's what I want to hear. Tell the truth. This is the variation of what we all used to know. In the league was the league, you had these five teams that always made an effort to act like they were trying to find somebody, be it a free agent or a draft pick or whatever. There were five teams that couldn't give a fuck, like Arizona or whoever else, and everybody in the middle was in a state of flux. Now, because of fantasy football and the action coming in from gambling, everybody pretends like they give a fuck, but they really don't, and the Raiders really don't. They're more concerned about how much money they can make off this event because now the draft has become an event. It's not quite the Super Bowl.
Mike, add an S to that. Add an S to that event. because basically between the draft and the Super Bowl, if the Raiders could get away with replacement football this year, I think they would. I think they would.
Yeah, they would do it.
In Las Vegas. I mean, they're in Las Vegas. They got the indoor stadium, right? They got these teams coming in. You have the tourist dollar every year, so you're going to get at least a 30% audience bandwidth of tourists. So you have European tourists, Central American tourists, Asian tourists. They're coming to Oakland, and part of the suite deals casinos are offering for the whales, for people who don't know, for luxury box suites, we'll mix in some Raiders tickets on your next visit if you come in on a Sunday.
If you show up early enough, you might make you the right guard.
Before you get into the luxury booth, go to Wynn Casino and place a bet on our guys. You know, just take five and the Chiefs. That's how it's played out. And so the thing is, it's like they're going to get a guaranteed sellout. They support UNLV basketball for years like they were a pro team. Even if they're not winning, they still do really well to run it.
They do very well.
Attendance-wise, right? Running Rebels to this day, no one's talking about UNLV basketball. They don't rate top 25. But, you know, if you shoot to Vegas, you got the tourist crowd coming in who want to watch you.
That's right.
You see what they do at the NBA Summer League with attendance.
And the NBA
markets that so well because they'll say the Suns are playing the Knicks, and they're the franchises, but there ain't no Suns or Knicks on the floor out there at all. Have the uniform and the name, and they used the women's gym, which was the original home of the Vegas Summer League, and they used the Running Rebels stadium. And both those places are filled 5 games a day, and that is in the summertime, and that's the high base. Now, if that's what they're doing for the NBA Summer League without the real NBA playing there, now you know that the Vegas Raiders got it made. They're going to be sold out ad nauseum. It's just nothing going to ever be.
Please, not going to change. Nothing changed.
Commitment to excellence has been changed to cha-ching.
Hey, Jim, time for Cinder's warming up. The awesome wind is a radar.
No. The awesome wind is a one-armed bandit. That's what it is.
Well, that makes him a raider. Yeah, no joke.
I would think
giving gangsters, pirates, et al., all those who made America great, we have to add into this mix the reality that there's some leagues that are actually taking the time out to see what's wrong with this situation and fix it. I want to take 30 seconds to just give the NHL some love. In 1977, the movie Slapshot came out. Now, I happened to see it at a sneak preview one time on 40 Deuce because I was on 40 Deuce for something else. And the movie came on. Everybody cracked the fuck up. And we're talking about the brothers and sisters up in the third row. Everybody enjoyed the movie. It's been 45 years since Slapshot. But the premise of Florida teams playing hockey is very real. The Tampa Bay Lightning, the Florida Panthers are two of the best teams in the league. They are playing awesome hockey. The Nashville Predators are down south in the Mid-South, and they're still playing good hockey. The L.A. Kings came out of nowhere to make the playoffs. They're playing good hockey. Hockey has grown the fuck up. And somebody is doing it right. And Tony, you pointed out that they're making efforts to go high tech to keep their fan base.
Well, the thing is with them now is that they sell. You know, it took a while because arguably they may have the weakest commissioner. In Gary Butthead. I'm sorry, Gary Bettman. I'm sorry. But in spite of him, they the Leafs have thrived. And see, the thing is, they look, and this is a snapshot because see again, if someone had told you say 10, 15 years ago that hockey would thrive in Florida and just the South in and of itself. We credit Wayne Gretzky for if Gretzky doesn't go to the Kings, you don't have the San Jose Sharks, you don't have the Anaheim Mighty Ducks, and so on and so forth. But the one unknown pioneer of the Florida movement is one former Hall of Famer, Phil Esposito. Now, Espo had bombed out as GM, head coach, and chief operating officer of those blue and white, those red, white, and blue assholes that play at MSG.
That's not nice.
Well, when you're an Islander fan, that's the nicest thing. That's the nicest thing. When you but his thing was when he was part of the group that brought in the Tampa Bay team and then eventually brought in Florida, which begat Nashville and then begat the Hartford Whalers becoming the Carolina Panthers. Old habits die hard, man. But unfortunately, some things don't change. Another team bombed out in Atlanta, so hey, you can't do it right all the time.
But when Gretzky came to L.A., Arizona, Anaheim, the move from the Nordic down to Colorado.
And don't forget the Minnesota North Stars became the Dallas Stars. Minnesota has a hockey tournament for high school that's a big deal every fucking year. You went from frozen-ass Minnesota to Dallas, and now they ding-ding Dallas, ding-ding Stars.
And despite that, it's still a unique demographic because it's probably 2% of the African American populace gives a fuck about hockey.
It's true. Here's the irony. There's more brothers in hockey right now than there are in Major League Baseball. And they're more
because of the NHL's unique demographic and the lack of marketing, right, there's no hockey, athlete commercials, right, per se, or a demographic of interest because it's still kind of really unique. Your brothers are going to pop up everywhere, man. We see them in bobsled and ice skating and swimming, where there may have been less
diehard
sports over the course of time. In terms of that demographic outreach in that style of play and the uniqueness, it's still a cold weather realm. So the teams can play in these areas because one thing about Florida, they have a lot of Russian populace there as well. And then you have your sports fans nevertheless.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget the translated New Yorkers that are down there too.
Exactly. The Northeasters are correct. You are correct. I mean, the people from Haiti.
Wherever I go to a short game, I see a lot of blue Islanders and blue Rangers out here.
Well, Gary, you have my permission to slap the shit out of the Ranger fans that you see there.
Where's Eddie Jackman when you need him?
Remember, the Kings borrowed the Raiders' colors from the purple and gold they used to have and became hot. They were popular. NWA started wearing their stuff. And the next thing
in Cali, it was associated with the Sets. So anything that was Colorado Rockies, anything that was Raiders, anything that was Silver and Black, L.A. Kings, it was code for the Sets. So a lot of that high school realm having coached predominantly in that era during, you know, alleged gang organizations, what they call them, Sets out here. So that's the term I use.
Yeah.
They use gangs from the legal thing to catch attention, this, that, the other. Mm-hmm. But they're actually the Sets, right? And so what happens with these cliques is the fact that they adopted that attire and mixed it in with certain, you know, groups of who they may be, right? Yep. And so the Rockies attire was banned. L.A. Kings attire was banned, as well as Raider gear was banned in certain school systems because they were all were affiliated.
Uh-huh. They
did that in New York, too. They did that in New York as well because Yankee jerseys had Paisley's combinations on them with the hats and stuff, and those colors were being worn by the Latin Kings. And there was one pitcher for Seattle, Felix Hernandez.
Right.
He was called King Felix. He was pitching, and he proudly wore gang colors. And nobody, unless you were one of those few that understood, knew what the fuck he was wearing.
And it was very covert, you know, because the cat could be walking in or, you know, with a Bo Jackson jersey and, you know, looked at as a Raider fan. He was totally representing his Set, you know, because he had other part of his outfit that was good. I mean, there was like literal training from educational levels when you were coaching this and that, or what to look for, what was representing signs, this, that, and the other. It fascinated me, you know, coming out of the East and just seeing some things like that, the subtleties of how things are, like, masked up, you know what I mean? And then you become really good at recognizing it, even to this day, you know what I mean? Because it's really uniform, man. It's really high-tech in a way, and it really represents certain things. So all law enforcement are up on that, but those teams were marketing not only just for their teams, but they were marketing for dun-dun-dun-dun, street cred. It was conscientious. There was no absent mind by these sports groups when they did that. The amount of marketing they put in to find the right color for the Dolphin jersey, now that Dolphin jersey color is trademarked.
You
can't just wear that color or get it duplicated. You can get a close approximation, but it's not the same. It's just like the Dodger white uniform, right? How white that uniform is. They use different materials, different cloth, and different ink sets. This shit is highly sophisticated. You know, when you get in the managerial and the professional and the marketing side of that, it comes from a whole different level.
And Mike, you know, I think what you said is really intriguing. I mean, big time. The fact that hockey players are in numbers are reaching the same numbers as baseball. Would you think that 40 years ago?
That never would have happened. I'm not joking. Hockey has worked hard to perfect its product, especially their postseason play.
Let me ask you this. Major League rosters field more players than hockey teams, correct?
When you say more
players in hockey, you're speaking to the percentage of players.
Definitely
not a gross number.
And numbers. We're not just talking about role
players.
So this is
based on American-born players, because every time I see them brothers from the Dominican Republic, even though they got different last names, I see brothers.
They are black.
We're talking black American players.
That's what I'm saying. So in other words, so the numbers are with the hockey teams, even though they have less. Now, how many teams are in hockey, professional hockey?
30.
32. How many in Major League Baseball?
30 as well.
30. Yeah. And so the cumulative numbers in hockey are higher than the cumulative numbers in Major League Baseball.
As of right now.
That's fascinating.
I think so.
As of right now, there are somewhere between 30 and 40 black hockey players, regardless of what country they come from. There are about 40 black hockey players. And with the playoffs coming up, many of these players have prominent roles in their team's success. So we've seen
that's intriguing.
To give a good example, basically for baseball, 7% of Major League Baseball rosters include African American ball players.
And it went down.
I'm using last year's numbers.
It's early.
Yeah. And the thing is with hockey, what would you say, Mike? 15, maybe 20%?
Somewhere between 15% and 20%. Because you've got to remember with the roster, the only thing hockey does not have is a marquee black goaltender. Not yet. We've got a couple of them, but we don't have anything on the level of a Grant Fuhr. You know,
let me ask you this. Has there ever been a black coach in hockey?
Eric, because this is how Tony and I met. Dirk Graham from the Chicago Blackhawks was a captain of the team. And Tony made him a captain and talked about him. And when I contacted Tony, I made the point that Jerome McGinley was captain before Dirk Graham. However, when Dirk Graham became player coach of the Chicago Blackhawks, he became the first black pro coach ever. So, yes, we've had a black pro coach.
Higher just from last year.
Let me ask you this. When was the last? Because we went back to the manager. We've always been on the ice. We've always been on the field. We've always been on the court, man. You know, we talked that, but we also talked about the longevity in that front office, right? And on those sidelines. Mm-hmm. So when was the last? Has it been a decade or more since a brother was a coach in the hockey in the NHL?
Yes, it's been a decade or more.
Oh, yeah. It's been more than a decade.
But we got differences now because we have the players taking on different responsibilities. You have arguably the best defensive player in the league as Seth Jones. Seth Jones of the Chicago Blackhawks. They paid a shitload of money to get him. He's become a huge star, but Chicago, unfortunately, didn't play as well. You've got others like Matt Dumba in Minnesota. You've got KT Miller with the New York Rangers, those motherfuckers from New York. And, of course, we've got the fact that we've had sprinkles of foreign black players who have done well. We've got Oliver Shillington from Sweden, I believe he is, playing for the Calgary Flames.
And you got
T-Mac, outside of Dusty Baker, is there another brother managing an MLB team?
No. No, unfortunately.
Dave Roberts.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Coaching representation and the GM representation. All right, okay, that makes sense. I like to see some brothers in them suits in them hockey games.
I tell you what, Mal, there's a woman, I forgot the lady's name, who has a high position in hockey. I just read an article about her. I left it in the station. Yeah. She's got a high position, more than diversity. She got some juice in the hockey league. Next time I get a name, but she,
Are you talking about at the league level? Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. We got a lot of brothers, you know, in these administration levels throughout these other leagues, but on the sidelines and GMs, there's no representation.
Baseball got, I think it got two GMs black, Williams from the White Sox, and I think there's one other.
Kenny's sort of like an emeritus role with the White Sox. Pretty much after they won in 05, he was like, okay, I'm done. He did sort of like what Bob Watson did after the Yankees won in 96. Hey, I'm done. I got my ring. I'm good.
But he's still there.
Oh, yeah, he's still there. Thank God. He's still there. You know, Bo Porter does some work with Major League Baseball and MLB Network. And you got guys like that all around you, like Jerry Manuel, the guy who used to be with the Cal Angels. You have Tyrone Brooks, who used to be with the Pirates, is in the office. So, you know, you're seeing more. It's but see,
how about broadcasters?
You got Dave Sims down in Seattle.
I'll put on the Seattle game later tonight just to hear Dave. I'm talking about hockey.
There is more hockey. Yes. For the Kraken, J.K. Brown,
okay,
formerly of the Tampa Bay Lightning, is the color man for with John Forslund.
And guess what else?
We have owner, football player.
Beast Mode.
Beast
Mode is now
part owner. The owner of the Kraken.
Yes.
Correct.
Marshawn.
Yes.
Marshawn Lynch. Now part of the Kraken. Yes, he is.
Cool.
There you go. I ain't mad at him. But Marshawn always was ahead of the crowd like that. He's a smart brother. You know,
I'm just saying, Mike, he's just here. He's just here hoping that the ice doesn't melt.
That's right. You know, we got Radio Reggie in the mix. We haven't spoken from Reggie for a while now. Reg, are you here? Can you hear us?
Reggie.
Somebody make him a sandwich, please, while we carry on. All right, so now the draft is tomorrow. We know there's going to be Hearts and Flowers and going to be telling the story.
Please.
Now,
please.
Ironically, they have not had enough time to say anything salacious about the quarterback Willis, or at least I haven't heard yet. But you notice that in spite of the fact they haven't said anything, they bumped up this kid, Pickett, whatever the fuck his name is, from Pittsburgh.
He's
making it sound like he is the number one. He's the number one selection. Now, we all come back from this draft thing. We know tape don't lie. Patrick, did the tape lie?
If the tape lied, they did a great edit job. Believe me, guys can do that. But that was too much.
Come on,
believe me. As I've always said,
every draft week, the only people that lie more than NFL executives that week are the folks in the House and the Congress, and it's only by about a couple of hours.
Come on.
But I'll say this. You know, I was talking to some people on Monday. Monday. Concerning the draft, and I said this draft is ambiguous.
And that
could be a good thing. You know why? Even though they're trying to get clear cut when it's like Pickett and the kid Hudson from Michigan, excuse me, that team from up north. We call them something else, seasons as they are. But no, they're trying to make that kid the number one pick, and he's not. He's very good. I have him on my team. But it could be any. It could go anywhere in terms of picks, and I think that's a good thing because
this was like the first time. What they're saying, this is the first time in like 20 years that there is no consensus number one pick.
Because the right agents have not seen off the right media people to pump it up to make you think that. That's where the ball sounds.
That's right.
But that's a good thing because now there's. Guys are now going to have to. They can't rely on the smokescreen of people in the media picking particular players to hide who they really want. Now it's going to come down to what you want and look for a lot of trade ups. I can sense it right now, and I believe that. I believe. And we're talking about Jacksonville. If they get a defensive end. timely to go in there and smack whoever who was in the draft room in the face. You better get you gave all that boy that money last year as a quarterback. You better get the best defensive line you get to protect his tail for the rest of the year. That boy from North Carolina who can block out the sun. That's who you need to go after. But you know, people don't use, people do crazy stuff. So again, it's ambiguous. And in New York, the Giants got more than draft problems, brother. They got some real problems. They got problems.
And
the front of us, remember the guy Logan Ryan? He played last year. He started with the Rutgers.
Mm-hmm.
Logan Ryan now has a grievance against the Giants and the organization. It just gets started. The videotape operator with the Giants and now has a grievance along with him. So if you get that, Ryan, the guy, the videotape operator, along with Flores, they got issues. Now, here's the trick. They want to try to arbitrate, to go to arbitration with all three, particularly Flores. You know
why? Shit.
Because if you go to arbitration, you don't have to let all your private information out. You can keep it in the house.
That's right.
You see?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So well, with that in mind, there's an underlink of the draft pick they're going to get. And they, too, better get a lineman because let me tell you something. Both cool Giants fans around here, they just looking to get on somebody. And the Jets, I know right now, the Jets are hiding. If it's the first time in a long time, the Jets have hid stuff for what they want to do. Because usually in the past.
The Jets have an agenda?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It's scary. Because by this time, they have already linked up with who they're going to get. You know, but
my goodness.
Who they better get, they better get a challenge with Jack Wilson because Wilson might not make it through another year where he's been getting hit.
Mike, God is right. The meek will inherit the earth at some point.
Yes, they will because I can remember the 99 draft. And I was working there for the Germans and my colleague, Tak Makita, who is a photographer journalist from Japan, he was like, "You wait. Jets will fuck this up." He said this before they actually named the first one because, of course, they picked Donovan. People fans lost their mind. And when the Jets number came up, everybody was waiting. You were there. Yes, we were there together. The funny part was hearing the pregnant pauses that Rizal was making because the Jets select with number 11, and they sit there, everybody's waiting, and he goes, "Kyle Brady," and we all started crying. I mean, what the fuck? Chad just looked up at me and started cracking up. Everybody was screaming, losing their mind.
Oh, Lord.
To me, the best one was in 83 when, you know, you had all those quarterbacks and Rozelle did the quarterback, Ken O'Brien, and he waited like 5 minutes.
Oh,
Lord.
Oh, God. Tony, speaking of the NFL and the draft, I got to give the NFL Network a great deal of credit and kudos. They did a piece on Matt Snell. Now, I got an interview with Matt Snell, goes back 10 years, and I play it every beginning of every football season because Matt doesn't like talking to the press.
Exactly.
That's why Matt doesn't like talking to the press. Even though they put his name in the stadium, he didn't come. That's how much he has this thing against the Jets.
Well, hold on. Y'all know what they did to him. Matt Snell was doing construction work. And apparently there was a position he was in line for, and all he needed was some reference from the Jets. This was years after he had become really the MVP of the Super Bowl.
The Jets
fucked him in the drive-thru. They wouldn't give him a recommendation. I was like, holy shit. And
that's like the Legion of Ex-Girlfriends petty, man.
Ex-wives, too.
Now, here's the twist that I didn't know, that they made very clear, some things that I had no idea. Well,
they drafted Matt out of that great University of Ohio State, but you know, Matt came there as a linebacker, and they made him out of a
really.
Player. Oh, Matt was All American at linebacker in his junior year. All right, but they changed it to running back. Now, what happened was Matt knew nothing about the draft. It was Matt's mother Matt was out somewhere, and his mother called and said, "You just got drafted by the Giants." He said, "What? Drafted what?" Make a long story short, they got Matt in, and Matt had established his presence on the field, which made it easier for the Jets to bring in a guy named Joe Namath the next year, because the fact that they established a running game that could help this guy named Joe Namath prepare to be the quarterback. Mm-hmm.
And I've heard of him.
Yeah, I found out recently through a friend who know he hadn't seen because Matt's not feeling well, but that Matt was the guy at lunchtime at halftime who gave the speech to go out to the field to beat the Baltimore Colts. So, of course, you know, he gives Namath some credit for the passes, but they gave Namath credit because not number one thing. But it was Matt Snell who set the precedent for Namath to be drafted, and the NFL did a tremendous job.
Interesting.
The thing about them, it's you know, when they do their documentaries or what have they are usually very good. They really do. And you know, if you ever watch some of that stuff from the 100th anniversary, great stuff. Great stuff. I do like to watch it sometimes when Mr. Costa is not on there. So, you know, but when they want to, they can do some really stellar work.
It was insane. That 64 draft was the one in which they were trying to, Gilbrandt of the Cowboys was trying to evaluate whether they're going to draft a guy named Bob Hayes.
I've heard of him.
So anyway, I think he can play a little bit.
Yes. Mm. But how long has it been? Now we know about the Steelers draft. We know about the Seahawks draft. We just finished talking about how some of these guys like McNugget and Mel Kiper are full of shit because they don't know a fucking thing about football. But who do we think? Who do we believe will be the next team that will draft X number of players and say, yeah, they got it right. These are the cats that will be the next great team to come.
Oh God.
This is tough because this may be a night where watching the first round may actually be somewhat fun because we know at the end of the day it's the NFL's version of American Idol, but because there are no consensus whatevers, you know, we have to go back to those words that we talked about earlier, player evaluation. Guys are going to have to eat their whole sandwich before the first round, and actually do some work. So Mike, I'll say it like this, and it's probably a bit of a cop out, but you know, take it for whatever it is. Always going to be the five teams that want to improve. It's going to be maybe the five teams that are on the outside looking in want to get in. Because the teams that don't want to do anything, they're not going to do anything.
Every time they think they have to, all they have to do is look at the check they get from the TV money, and they realize they don't have to do anything. So there won't be any malaise. It'll just be acceptance that, all right, we'll just collect ours. And with the gambling money, there's always going to be
money.
They're going to run out.
They got platforms of money coming in that even accountants don't even know. Lord have mercy.
Mike, I'm going out on a limb this year. The Raiders are gonna draft an obscure lineman from Northern Illinois by way of Oakland to play for them this year. You what?
Oh, Lord.
Gary, stay by your phone tomorrow. That's all I'm going to tell you. Yeah. Stay by your phone.
You know, okay. And I said before, ambiguous is the word because these guys have got, of course, now anybody, as of last Saturday, anybody say nothing. You know, up until last Saturday, folks were saying where they were going to go. I was sad nobody says nothing. But see, these guys, they forget the players. There's some GMs that are going to be fired maybe by mid-season.
And rightfully so.
I agree. I'm targeting Seattle because they've lost Russell Wilson. They've lost some other players. And now they could possibly lose DK Metcalf. My Eagles have been supposedly priming
himself
for a chance to snatch his ass up. I hope they will because they need help because some of the receivers they picked up, they ain't shit. And they drafted a couple of these boys. So I know what I'm talking about. Having said all that, the likelihood of trade – I'm sure we'll see some
big time.
We'll see some
and I hate to say it, Mike, hate to say it. I really hate to say it because it kills me. My boy, Reggie's cousin, Jimmy Johnson, might be in the middle of that.
Oh, shit. There we go. Mm. See that? There we go. I still want to know what is happening, though, with Washington. They've buried the story. Ooh. I don't know if it's clear or not, but the issue with Washington and the two sets of books, and he just flipped out. They haven't talked about that, and it's obviously something that's going on there. Like
yes,
old Jim Stock, they're going to have to say something. Now, whether it comes out to watch during this draft or not, they will have to say something. Will they? I don't know. But I don't expect any surprises. I expect the orchestrated, yes, the young kid, he was a single parent, blah, 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 born the ghetto.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yes,
I wish they stopped that shit sometimes. I'm not joking.
Overcoming
story.
Overcoming adversities of a hangnail disease at 19.
Yeah, yeah. Or his father's in jail, and he's rooting for him in jail. Give me a freaking
break. I want to see another Big Mama story like last year when the Buffalo Bills, no, it was the Tennessee Titans. They drafted this offensive lineman, and his mama was there, and the girlfriend was there. As soon as he got kicked, the girlfriend was laying all over him like, oh, Santos, we got the money. And mama's there like, if you don't get off my son, you fucking heifer. You know, I couldn't believe the look on her face. I'm surprised she didn't get her ass whooped right then and there, but I digress.
Hey, this way, like those memes that you see on Facebook, if ass whooping had a face, that would be her.
wait. Hey, Mike, have you seen the skit of Saturday Night Live about the guy being drafted?
Yeah. Mike, Lord. You know she was looking for somebody's ass. She probably cussed a blue streak. and you know how it is. They're 6 foot four and they're 300-something pounds.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
yeah.
Mom. That's right. Bend over. I'm surprised she didn't say bend over and get that whooping. She just took a whooshing.
Beat him with that King James Bible is what she did.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
are you talking about LeBron?
No.
Hey, I hate to say it, but it's going to happen. You know, I say it every year, guys, for football and basketball. These individuals who don't use their head and have these daggone draft parties with everybody in their mama neighborhood in the house. That's fine. Happy for them. And that's fine. But as you walk in the door, holler at me. I'm going to talk with you later on. You know what that means.
That's right.
He's not asking them about annuities. I can tell you that much.
Yes. I got... I, I got an idea for you, man. I want to talk about something. But, bro, you didn't got no job.
And just so happens he has 100 copies of his mixtape in his pocket too. Just you know, purely coincidental.
That's right.
Man.
So here's one to consider before we close it out to our final thoughts. Now we got the USFL going. You know, some of the games have been pretty decent.
Pretty good.
There's a lot of cats in the league. Who are XFL or CFL still coming on, you know, you got to wonder what they must be thinking when they know that when they call out Patrick Farrar, Gary Gray's name, or Eric Satterwhite's name, that these brothers are going to get bonuses that are going to be ching-ching and it'll be more money than they've seen in life. What must the feelings be as all this is going through their head?
Who got the right agent? Who knows the right guy?
That's one.
Well,
that's a definite one.
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, the thing that's, you know, missed in that bypass, too, it's always an expectation the money's coming in anyway.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not – the shock factor is when you don't get drafted. Because the moment you get on that trajectory as a Under Armour All-American, all the hype that comes out of high school and – you get on that course where you got 1, 2, maybe 3 years in college before declaring for the draft, you're getting funneled, you know, side loot anyway. So you're just waiting for the big payday. So the thing is, what's missed is it's not the overnight. Now, when the money comes in, they even have this thing on YouTube. They go, well, how did you spend your first million?
Lord, have mercy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, literally, it's like a major, it could be Men's Health, it could be a major magazine. I mean, they literally said all these brothers, Caucasians to those who, you know, athletes who play, how did you spend your first, I bought my mom a house and I bought this car. Then I put another, and they start taking out like fake money and start stacking and letting you know how they spent their first million. So it's this already projected mannerism that you got the money. Now it's just a manifestation of the money when you physically get it. And then, you know, just the more money's more problem distribution that takes place after that. Because the NFL will continue to have their symposium for rookies prior to the season.
Half a million go.
How 90% of them are going to go divorce, get in jail, or be broke.
We're looking at when they cross the stage.
Just once, I would like to see one of them say, well, what did you do with your first million? I bought a Buford Puster stick, and I'm going to beat you with it if you ask me that question again.
See, the moment you know you sign up with Caesar, you got to render.
That's true. Now, here's the best one. Shaquille O'Neal put it best. Shaquille O'Neal said he got $1 million, you know, and he brought his mama a car. When he brought his mama's car, his stepfather, who helped raise him, he said, where's mine? Brought his. He brought some stuff. And he said, next thing you know, from $1 million, he's down to like $200,000. He said, and that wasn't the problem. The problem was this guy named Piker. I don't know who he was. He took all his money.
Pike is a dirty fucking bastard, is what he is. He's a dirty fucking bastard.
If you have the poverty mentality, right? If you got the poverty mentality, you and I at that shit.
That's the poverty mentality.
If you see it as a condition of a trade-off of what the market bears, and this is what's associated with it, and then how I can best maximize this over the long term of my career, then you're literally the 1% crowds. So this thing, you know, I mean, this thing here to me is kind of like, you know, just poof. You know, it's like a you know, you want to be a comet or a meteor, right? A meteor flames out fast, a comet. Very few comets in this orbit.
You know, in my almost 8 years on Wall Street, I had to take this course for almost 6 months with this firm. And you know what the name of the course was? The Psychology of Money. I'm going, what the hell? It was one of the best things I ever did in my life. Understanding the psychology of what people do with money.
Wow.
I mean, again, money is, money, unfortunately, is a poverty tool that, people talk about this money thing, money this, that, and the other. Well, how do you best maximize your income to me? So to me,
that's
it's
true.
Like, I look at this shit, and it's like, there's no loot in it for me, so it's just sidebar.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Mm-hmm. Some guys,
total sidebar. Because, no one in here in this room got skin in the game Thursday night. So,
yep.
Other than kind of like, and that's cool by me, but the thing is, it's like when you see that happening, we know far too many. We look at those first round draft picks in the last 20 years and see what they're doing now, UPS, Amazon, where they're working, what they're doing.
Yep.
If they have all their marbles straight.
The adage from years I worked with these sports teams I work with is this. What makes you go broke is your mama, your baby mama, family and friends. It's the groundwork, the foundation of you going broke.
Yeah.
If you don't control them,
you're
done.
That's true. That's true, too. But really, as a money coach, you do this on the daily, talking to people about their finances, helping them shift their financial equation on the regular, and even enhancing credit. People just are mystified. They do not know what money is. And if you ask 1,000 people what money is, there's going to be 1,000 variations of answers. It has not liberated, brothers and sisters, one iota. Because the concept of how it moves in management is totally still a mystery. I can take a person's credit score from 400 to 850 in 3 months because it's demystifying what the process is. They don't even know what credit is. That's another factor that's not evaluated in this process.
We all know how many ball players we know. I'm going to give it when I work with the Nets. His last year with the Nets was Williams with the Nets. He was from Maryland. Anyway.
Don't worry about it. It's not Buck.
It was Buck.
It goes back to Buck.
Buck didn't know how to write a check.
Wow.
I've seen it so many times up front and personal because When you had the pill, I'll give you a case in point. So Tim Duncan got ripped the fuck off.
Yes, he did.
Right? Mm-hmm. So after all these examples prior to him, Tim Duncan got ripped the F off of millions by his manager, right, the do-it-all financial guy. Kevin Garnett became a character witness for the money manager of Tim Duncan because he was managing Tim Duncan's money. I was like, what kind of soul-dulgery is this? And then check how it plays out. A year later, Kevin Garnett was suing the same guy for all the millions he lost.
Holy in the first degree.
So we're talking about these are recent times of all the sophistication. When you're on that blacktop honing your jump shot and you're working on your game and you're working on your body, you're not studying finances. You're not taking classes on that. And the thing is, we see it all the time. It's just like, I was looking at this thing on Sugar Hill, right? Master G, Wonder Mike, the ones who laid down that first hip-hop track and how they can't even use their image or their name or anything like that.
Yeah.
And they were told how all they were into was girls in a fancy car and you can't have nothing else.
Yeah.
But that's still happening to athletes right now. Pippen got ganked. Jordan got ganked. Kareem got ganked. I mean, it's just on and on and on and on we go. So then the NFL, we're looking at paper paupers, and it's really unfortunate because it's the old saying, a fool in his money is soon departed because it was a miracle they got together in the first place, and that's how everyone
that's
who sees them sees
exactly
them.
Right.
That's exactly right.
So all of that hype about this, that, and the other. I mean, Tyson lost $300 million.
You know,
$300 million.
there's a lot of the Hunger Games in this NFL draft. You know, like nobody's going to lose their life, but the odds of thousands of players being whittled down to less than 250-odd folks tells you what a struggle it is, how you have to be lucky to not get hurt, to not be in a situation where you're too jeopardized, to be in a situation where you'll get politicized by a coach or the school or anybody else. You've got to have so many things working in your favor to be put in this position where they'll pick up a card and they'll say Patrick Farrar or Gary Gray, Eric Satterwhite in that first round. Because when they picked it up, somebody has already decided that you're going to be a rich motherfucker. Now, whether you get to keep it is another story. But they made the decision for you to attempt to keep it. So that is all.
Well, I mean, that's fiction too. Because the thing is, it's like it all comes down to your own individual decision, right? It's like if a person goes out and they try a drug and they say, well, everyone else was doing it, then, you know, I'm of the one that says, well, it becomes the individual decision when you put it in your body. No longer was it a group effort. That was a total individual decision. Ultimately, with this resource thing, because it's on and on again, we know that the overwhelming numbers are is going to be a story. It's going to be an end run that's going to take place. And we're watching the temporary. You know how what I liken it to is like are in a wartime situation, right? And you know you need boots on the ground to you know, conquer your mission. You're looking at a 40% casualty rate before you even send them out.
Yes.
You know that's guaranteed.
Ask Russia right now. Yep, attrition
is a
guarantee.
So when you look at the sports matrix, it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know that there's going to be an overwhelming number of casualties. Disguise your best preparation. That's a fact.
Yep.
Proven over too many years, man. Come on now. We got to just be hip to this game.
Yeah.
So when I see that, I'm like, okay, it's fluffery.
Yeah.
Pure fluff.
Yeah.
Hopefully you're looking for the best outcome all the time. But we already know that's the 1% going to take. Mike's right, the whittle effect. So you got a million people out here doing flag football, 7-on-7s all across the country, hooping, AAU 24/7 all year round. It's only 12 jobs.
You got brothers right now that we see on TV that are ready to throw their bodies all upside Southwest hell for $7,500 a game. A game.
That's called indoor football. That's called the indoor football league in some cases.
That's
the league I work for. Mike, I will say this, Mike, very quickly. There are some people who have changed it around. The guy that was drafted by was a free agent, Cincinnati Bengals, named Andrew Hawkins, who was never supposed to make a league. You know why? Because he was 5'7", 175 pounds.
That's right.
He made the Bengals and played the Browns for 2 years, played for 7 years. I'll end at this. He's one of the most prominent young sports management people and innovators going on right now. He has a company called Status Pro. Status Pro. It's an XR makeup app that now has been brought by the NFL because it's taken a game versions of what you see with the kids play into plays that match the game's every play. It's a tremendous. Let's look it up. It's tremendous. It's a plus.
Amazing.
He's also he has a money. He's been nominated for Grammy Award, but also a Academy Award for some movies he's done. This brother has maximized. He went to school, he graduated, he got his master's while playing football at Columbia University. He maximized his whole pro. So we're looking to do something with that company. We're trying to work on it now because these guys, and also are in with this. He's going to have the first game that, we know what Madden is, but the NFL wants to put up their own game of electronic, game football, of gaming.
Yeah.
Well, his company already has a deal to make it. That's what I'm talking about, what can be done.
That's excellent. That's a beautiful way to set
We always got that 1 to 5% crowd, and it's exceptional to see that. Just need more of it.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to close it out. I love it. We got the evaluation and the culmination of the Underpants Olympics in the Lions Club tomorrow. I want to see who's going to tell the biggest lie. And it's not going to be like Richard Pryor when he said, damn, this water's cold. Ah, and it's deep, too. Yeah, well, we're going to see lies on that stuff tomorrow. And we'll see what they do. Now, I am always thankful for everybody who contributes some stuff and puts some good shit in the pot. We're going to dispense a little differently here with closeout. I am thankful to Eric Satterwhite and Patrick Farrar and Tony McClain, the Professor Fred Witter, and Gary Norris Gray. But tonight, because the draft tomorrow, we don't get to say happy birthday, so we're going to say happy birthday to our brother Patrick Farrar.
I'm
going to be 21 years old. Yes.
That's it.
Very soon. Yeah. And I'm going
to
be
21
the day
after that. Now, mind you, he didn't say how many 21-year-old birthdays he had, but he had at least one that we know.
One or two. He also didn't say how many priors too.
The last birthday party he had, I had at least 21 candles on my piece. I don't know how many was on the other one.
That's cool.
Well,
happy birthday, brother.
I will leave this on my brother's cake. Happy birthday, brother. Many more.
Amen.
And thank you. I need to relate to this because you're from my neck of the woods. So everybody's going to close out with this.